Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to the show. This is the Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. I'm your host, pop art painter Jamie Rocks, and this is the big show. You found it. I sure am glad you did. I am very excited for tonight's show. We've had this one on the schedule for a couple weeks, and I just kept screwing it up, ladies and gentlemen. It was a collection of different things and whatnot, and you know, when you have a sometimes our guests have to work. They have different things going on and whatnot. So not a problem. We rescheduled it. And tonight it is happening, baby. It is happening. I'm so excited. Our guest tonight, I am a huge fan of. She's in a new film that just came out like a week ago called Army of One. And I love her work. I have loved her in so many things. It's all kinds of stuff. The Blacklist she was in. Get Out, one of my favorite all-time horror movies ever. And now she's in this feature film, Army of One. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Miss Geraldine Singer. Mrs. Geraldine Singer, I should say.
Well,
Geraldine,
hi there.
How are you?
Hi, Jamie. I'm so glad we finally connected. I just, you know, in this day and age, we are all subject to be techno victims.
It's
nice that we finally got to connect.
Absolutely. I'm a typical guy. I love gadgets, and I always say technology, when it works, there is nothing more frustrating to me when it doesn't work. You know? But
My husband, just a little tangent, my husband, since in these COVID times, my husband is a musician and he plays the piano, guitar and sings. And he does, these days, he loves to do musical performances and has been doing them at assisted living and senior centers and things like that. So during COVID, they do all of that over Skype or Zoom. And if I tell, so he did one this afternoon. If I could tell you the anxiety, the 15 minutes before we get connected through Skype or Zoom, it's like, do they have my right name? Are they calling me? Am I? It's like, you know, it's pan. And then he starts the show. And of course, he's done this for a long time and he's very accomplished and it all goes smoothly, but it's like, you know, the 10 minutes before we're in absolute panic. Are we going to be able to make it work? So,
awesome.
So anyway,
I'm glad we're all
suffering with that these days.
And I tell you a cool part of that story as well. I have, growing up, all of my friends, it seems, were musicians or in bands, or they wanted to, you know, they wanted to be rock stars. That was a thing. Until I moved to California, I knew a few out there, but mostly it was they wanted to make movies. When I moved to Southern California, they all changed, you know. But some of my musician friends, here you go, folks. Here you go. Here's a great couple. He's doing his gig in the middle of a pandemic. Things are going on. And his gal's right there with him. You know, he may not run it, running the merch booth, but he's helping out. And I have a lot of friends that are going.
So, however we get it to work, we make it work. So, anyway, well, I'm delighted to finally be talking to you. And I know we have a lot to talk about, but one of the first things that I want to say is, you know, I've been checking out your artwork online and I'm blown away and so excited and very inspired because you're doing a lot of what I initially have been trying to do, which is these very large. So I've really been enjoying seeing the stuff that you've got posted.
Well, thank you so much. And like I said, I went through your Facebook and you know, just What I was doing, Geraldine, is I was making this little shrine, you see, and putting 100 pictures of you that I've taken casual. No, I'm teasing. But no, I was going through your Facebook photos. I don't know. I think I was looking for a good headshot for the website. Anyway, it doesn't matter. And I saw that you were painting, and your paintings are fantastic. They're great.
Well, thank you. You know, very, very, very beginnings. I used to paint when I was much younger, but it's been, over 40 years. And here we are in, we're in this apartment in New York for God knows how long with very little to do, very little that we can do. So a friend of mine had given me some watercolors, which I had tried. Watercolors. God, watercolor makes me want to tear my hair out. But I had some watercolor paper, and I had the watercolors, and I just started playing, and it's very satisfying. Very satisfying. Now I'm working with acrylic, so it's a lot easier. So anyway,
I do some oil, mostly acrylics, especially when I'm doing commissions, because I don't know, man, the people that hire me to do stuff, they change their minds a lot. They're like, I think that shirt green. Okay. Well, we got a different dog. Can you paint the schnauzer into a boxer? Yeah, I can do that, you know. my worst that I ever did, years ago, I had been hired by this film festival in California. And they said, hey, we're giving some awards to these celebrities. Can you paint the celebrities? We'd like to give them a painting as well. And I'm like, yeah, I can do that. You know, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. And so I was hired to do that. And as a little thank you gift for the people who ran the festival, who, you know, owned the festival, I thought, they were a great couple, and they had a lovely daughter and whatnot. And, you know, I talked to them several times. No, I never went to their house to eat, but I went out to dinner, and the three of them, we had dinner one night. Anyway, so I painted a little portrait of the family there, you know, to kind of give them as a thank you and whatnot. And talk about stepping on the quicksand. He took me aside. He said, oh, man. He goes, we love it. Thank you so much. He goes, but we have a problem. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? And he says, well, we have another daughter. And they had another daughter who, I guess, wasn't interested in film or going to dinner or anything. I didn't know. And they're like, we can't go home and put this up and leave her out. And I said, no, you can't.
Oh, God.
I'm going to leave the therapy. I said, let me take the painting. I said, if you can email me a picture of the other daughter, she'll be in there.
Yeah.
And so crisis averted, but. Yeah, that happened, man.
Yes, disaster. Well, hey. Yeah, family crisis. Diverted, right, yes.
I'm telling you, I saw this one story where this woman and her husband, they were going hiking, or they were out and about, and they came across this crime family out in the woods. It was just terrible, drug dealers. But the gal was... She was an Army Ranger or something like that, and just a badass.
Yeah, the story's starting to sound familiar, which is you're steering me back to what should we really be talking about here? Yeah. Yes,
well, it is
as
great
I
movie.
Said before, Ellen Holman and Stephen Durham and Marianne Barnes and David Ditlinger would really love it if we would talk about Army of One.
Right.
So yes, well, paint the picture for us, Jamie.
Well, it's an action-packed film. And you play the antagonist, the mastermind, the villain. Let me ask you this. So this is one of those things, you know, you always see people in these chat shows and stuff ask them. But and I'm curious because you are just, you know, sweet as pie and such a nice lady. And you know, I've seen you in some of your work where you're not. I know it's what you do for a living.
Right, so this is the question I always like to ask people is that, okay, what have you seen me in where I was not a sweet lady?
Well,
and I know what you're
going to
say.
Movie.
Huh? This movie. Yeah, no,
this
was a complete departure for me, which was one of the things that was very, that made it very interesting for me to do. But everybody that I've asked that question will say, well, you were so evil in Get Out. And I point out to them that I was not evil at all. In my personal storyline, my only concern was to make sure that my husband, who had been through a very traumatic experience, was okay. I'm being solicitous for his well-being and showing him off to our friends. And there's not, in my mind, there's not an evil bone in my body. It's just because the backstory, what the audience knows, is places me in a very different light than the way that I see myself. So it's very interesting. And also, so that gets us back to this character of Mama, where I am, in fact, a pretty badass. She makes some nasty choices, and she knows what she's doing. But in her own personal story, she's a heroine, you know? So... She's taking care of business and she's taking care of her family. So anyway,
that brings up an interesting, an interesting conversation. I had a conversation. This is, it's so weird. It seems like a million years ago, but it's been like a year, back when you used to go to cocktail parties and socialize and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Pre-COVID.
Yes, the good old, as we used to call it, the good old days. Right?
The good old days, but I remember I was talking to someone. I was at some, and I might have had a drink or two in me, and that's never a good plan. But it is what it is. And I they were talking about something. Something had happened. I think there was a shooting in France or Paris or one of these, terrible things that happened pretty regularly. And I wasn't defending the people, but I said the interesting thing. I said, we watch all these movies, Star Wars, and everything. I said, but all these terrorist people, to them, they're Luke Skywalker and Han Solo. They're the good guys. And that's how they view it, And really, every villain thinks he's doing okay, doing the right thing, but usually. Not maybe every villain.
Well, yes, not always, but usually, yes. Yes. I would say, Mama knows that, some of what she does is questionable. But more than questionable. I mean, she's willing to have people killed, and she knows she knows what that is. I mean, she declares herself a woman of a certain religious faith, so she knows how that would be judged. But she says, "I will let you can't judge me. That's for my Lord and Savior." To judge me,
right.
You don't judge me, and she's willing to live with that bargain. So she's an interesting character, and
I loved about this film the chess match. Yes, it's an action passion, and I'm going to tell you, and it's a female led action movie.
Well, yeah, let's emphasize that it's not just led by Ellen, because we've had female led, not many, but you look at Atomic Blonde,
right.
And there are other movies too. But for the villain on the other side to also be a woman, so it's these two strong, determined women, one against the other, each with a different skill set, So yeah, and that's the other thing that I love about being in the movie, that females.
Well,
and then even to the point of, you know, and then Kendra's character, you know, and then the relationship between Kendra and Ellen. You know, there's just a lot of interesting stuff going on here.
One of the things, like I said, I love this chess match between the two, and it's really riveting, and it draws you in. And I don't want to sound misogynistic or anything, but I'll tell you, in my life out here in the world, man, women can be mean. You don't want to make them mad. Took me a couple marriages to figure that out, but
well, you know, here's the thing. Yes, they certainly can. But you know, I'm not trying to elevate any kind of you know, bad behavior.
Right.
But here's the thing that women have that must never be underestimated. You threaten someone they love, child. You threaten a loved one, as in the case of Ellen and her husband, in the case of me and the family, the extended family that I have created, is that we will go to extraordinary ends to protect or fight back. You know, I mean, there's the amazing stories of mothers who lifted up cars off of their, you know, their child who was pinned. You know, where does that strength come from? That's that inner maternal drive to protect and or fight back, and never underestimate that.
No.
I'm telling you,
that's why I have always laughed at, you know, it's changing. The world is slowly changing, but you know, I've known people that are the old trope of back when people used to, and it's kind of, I guess, apropos to this film, certain idiots that I knew would say, you know, well, women could never be in the military and blah blah blah, you know, all this kind of nonsense, and I'm like,
yeah.
Have you never made a woman mad? Are you kidding me? No. You know, yeah, a guy will shoot you. That's terrible. But no, women will kill you in all kinds of painful, mean, hurt your feelings before they do it. You know. No good. But I don't know. That's just me. Maybe the women I found out with. I don't know. Anyhow. Yeah. And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Aloha. If you have stress in your life or even anxiety and panic, I want to invite you to the Anxiety Coaches Podcast for a way out. The Anxiety Coaches Podcast is a relaxing and inspiring show bringing you lifestyle changes to calm your nervous system and help you heal. Heal anxiety, panic, and PTSD for life. We bring you 2 episodes every week. There's no need to walk this path alone. Join us for a relaxing, informative, and inspiring time and start your journey out of anxiety panic. That's anxietycoachespodcast.com. Aloha.
Support for this podcast comes from the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, ranked one of the top cancer centers in the nation for the last 27 years. The doctors at MD Anderson treat more rare cancers in a single day than many physicians see in a lifetime. And treatment plans are tailored to an individual patient's needs, allowing more comprehensive and thorough care. To become a patient, please visit MakingCancerHistory.com.
Hey there, my name is Paige Beattie, and I am the founder of Hats On and Hats Off, which are two separate companies but aligned by the same philosophy of raising cancer awareness and forming smiles. Hats On is a for-profit corporation that sells cancer-specific hats to be proudly worn by you in hopes of raising awareness. A percentage of the proceeds will be donated to Hats Off, which is a nonprofit corporation raising money to buy wigs for cancer patients who can't afford them. That's where we're forming smiles. I believe cancer has touched almost everyone's lives in one way or another, a friend, a family member, a friend of a friend. So please visit our website, www.hatsonhatsoff.com, to learn how you can help raise awareness and form smiles.
Ruxgear, the online web shop of high-end luxury merchandise and products, all featuring original pop art paintings. From La Jolla to Miami to London, www.merch.jamierux.us.
Well, this is a great film.
I'm glad you think so. It's very hard for, you know, initially it was very hard for me to tell because I'm so close to it. But, you know, on the first viewing of it, I was so impressed. It looks like a very high budget movie. That's what I think. I think that the cinematography, the editing, and when you think of the fights, you know, there wasn't a big budget for lots of special effects. So here's the deal: Ellen's doing all of that. She's doing all of that, you know, there's no stunt doubles. There's no, you know, so it's a very sort of gritty, hands-on kind of action. A lot of explosions and gunfire and, you know, special effects kind of stuff. It's you know, it's mano a mano. And I for one, when I saw it, I went, wow. Because you go into a project, you really don't have any idea, and it really doesn't matter whether it's a very high-end project or whether it's in this case where it was a, you know, a lower-budget independent thing. There, you really don't know what the final outcome is going to be. You know, Ellen certainly had more control over that as because she was co-producing and also, you know, the input that she had on the script. But for me coming in, you know, it's like I'm in their hands. I show up. I have to fulfill my obligation as an actor. But then it's totally out of my. I have no idea what it's going to be. And you know, I've been in projects, not many, but you know, I can think of one or two where. Name, star, interesting script, and you know, I had a small role. I thought, oh, this is going to be a big deal. This will push things forward a little bit, and it disappears. It goes straight to, you know, straight to video, because nowadays everything goes straight to video. That's not a, but you know, when things could have a theatrical release, you know, it's like, what happened to this movie, you know, and because it just didn't work, you know, and it's buried, so you don't know. And that's, you know, one of the things with film is it's a director's medium, and you know, you just have to, you know, you show up, you do your work, and you hope that it's something special. So when I actually saw the movie, I was so damn impressed. Wow.
I was really
impressed. This does not look like a. This does not look like a. You know, a low budget feature. This looks like a. You know, really high end, high end film.
And especially some of the external shots and whatnot. Because now again, I am not in the film business, so I am just a cinephile. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan. But especially since doing the show, I've watched a lot of independent films, you know, mm-hmm. a lot. And I've seen the gamut of all levels. And one of the things I really dug about this is, and again, it's maybe, I don't know, you know, the cameras or the people in charge of lighting and whatnot, but the external shots, I mean, you're shooting in a forest, which I assume isn't in Southern California. Mm-hmm. It's probably, you know, somewhere in the Southeast or something like that.
No, I'm pretty sure all of that was shot in Alabama while we were there. Well, not while I was there. A lot of the forest stuff obviously was not shot while I was there. Because I didn't, you know, they don't need me there while they're doing that. But seriously, I know where that location was, because the day I showed up, they were probably shooting their last forest stuff. And it was some kind of a hiking park area that was outside of Dothan, and very rustic looking, and yeah, out in the woods. No,
well, they probably had guys and gals with big reflector sheets or something. I mean, this was film. It looked amazing. You know, I was just super impressed with the quality of what you saw, you know, because you don't always see.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of that, I have to credit, you know, our cinematographer, whom I thought, and, you know, the other thing is, because Ellen has talked about this, John, who, when they were doing the big fight, that's sort of the, you know, the last major action sequence of the film, where Ellen, in fact, quote unquote, escapes. That is one long shot where she dispatches.
Really?
Yeah, go back and look at it. I didn't realize it until it was mentioned in one of the reviews, and I went back and I looked at it and went, damn, it tracks from her leaving the bedroom, going down the hall. She dispatches, I think, two guys in the hall, in one hallway. She turns, she dispatches another guy. She goes into the kitchen, she dispatches two more, and then when she comes out, she kills one, two, five, six. This is the sixth guy, and then the sequence stops. It's kind of astonishing. And she and I was there on that day because we were getting ready to shoot the last confrontation that she and I have. So I'm watching all of this, and I'm just watching her just go through this book. It was like watching. I mean, it was a choreographed dance that was done so
like
beautifully.
A ballet,
because, like, exactly, and
a ballet of violence.
Yeah. That was pretty amazing. And again, I didn't realize it until it was mentioned in a review, and I went back and looked at it and went, damn, yeah, that's one long tracking shot. Oh, so to go back to the cinematographer, so then it's not just choreographing the fight, which, and of course, you know, she has the great advantage of being married to Steve Dunleavy, who's one of the, you know, premier, you know, stunt coordinators in the business. But, you know, having, you know, his team, so they, you know, they have kind of a common language, you know, a familiarity. Mm. But she has to make sure that the camera is choreographed, because it has to be in the right place at the right time through that whole tracking that's on a Steadicam to get everything at the right angle so that it plays.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
That's pretty impressive. That was pretty damn impressive.
Well, you know, it's so funny because there's so many people out in the world like myself that, you know, we're sitting on the couch, we're watching this. And, you know, you rarely, because you're watching the movie, you're into the movie, and you don't think, you know, you're like, man, a lot of work. And I bet it was real nice and cool day there in southern Alabama that day.
I'm pretty sure that was August. In Dothan, Alabama.
Oh, man.
Oh my God. There were a couple of times where we were doing, you know, external shots. The wonderful young man, Nathan Bright, who did all the special effects makeup. There was a sedan that was parked, you know, out of view, because there was only one sort of high-end trailer that we had, and it was too far away.
Right.
So, you know, I kept saying, I'm going to go sit in the car with Nathan and turn on the AC and, like, do not call me until you're ready to do the shot, because I will be sweating, and you don't want that.
You're such a southern lady. I do declare I'm having heat flashes.
That was self-preservation. It was so damn hot. It was unbelievable. Wasn't quite so bad, you know, when we were in the house. But, damn, out in the sun.
I'm telling you. I live in South Florida, and, you get a couple miles away from the beach, you know, from the ocean, and oh, it gets just missed. And I'm a chunky monkey,
it's
terrible.
It was pretty brutal in a couple of days. And I wasn't even doing anything particularly physical, so you can imagine what it was like to be Ellen in those hot, steamy summer Alabama days, you know.
Well, That's why they pay you the big bucks, Geraldine. That's why they pay you the big bucks.
That's right.
Let me ask you, when you were a young lad, mm-hmm. did you know that, you know, showbiz and entertainment is what, being a thespian was in your future? Was that the plan to be an actress?
No, or
an actor from an early age?
Well, okay. So I've told this story before, and I blame it actually on my grandmother. I was an only child, so it was two aspects of that. One was that I didn't have any siblings, and I spent a lot of time alone. So I was socially somewhat shy, but not in my family, because my grandmother, who basically raised me till I was about seven. I mean, she was my caregiver while my mom was working. She basically thought that, you know, I was the second coming. You know, I could do no wrong. So I remember at age four, my great aunt Loretta passed away, and we went to her funeral, which was about an hour away, I think, in Gulfport, Mississippi. And in the middle of that wake, my grandmother stood me up on a table and had me recite for everybody at the wake My Little Red Wagon, which was a child's record that I had memorized. And so I blame it all on my grandmother.
Then you had the bug. Truly, it was all downhill.
Well,
from there.
But truly, I think, you know, as someone who was sort of, when I was younger, very shy, you get up and you do something. I was in a summer theater program at the New Orleans Recreational Department, and I did a play where I had like one line, and suddenly, you know, people were treating me differently, so that I felt accepted, and that was such a, you know, it's like, oh, look, you know, I feel at ease now because I don't have to go out of my way to reach out to them. They're reaching out to me because I just did this little thing that, you know, I'm getting some attention for. And that's very, very seductive. So having done, you know, Little Abner when I was 13, I was pretty much hooked. I got to stand in the center of the stage and say, "Marion Sam, who is Jubilation T. Cornpone?" And then a great song, you know, ensues, and I'm standing next to the lead as he explains to me who Jubilation T. Cornpone is, and I'm center stage, and I'm in heaven. So yeah, it was, you know, it was like that.
I was going to say, now, you know, you're conquering the stage, you know, from a young age and whatnot. And it's something, I was looking through your pictures before, and I saw photos from a production of Virginia Woolf you did, where you looked great. Yeah. You know, I didn't see the video of it or anything, but you looked amazing in it. Exactly how I pictured it in my mind. Do you prefer the stage as opposed to film, or are they just two completely different animals?
Well, they're two different animals, and you know, initially, of course, I just wanted to be on stage. I thought that the best thing in the world would be to be part of a rep company, like where I would be doing, you know, Shakespeare and Chekhov and Bernard Shaw. I mean, that's what it is. But as Patty Chayefsky once said to my husband, "Bob, there's no money in theater." That's a long story. My husband was in Patty's last play on Broadway, The Passion of Joseph D, which was the last play he ever wrote. He then went on, of course, to write film. When I came to New York, and I came to New York late because I got sidetracked by getting married and to somebody who didn't particularly want to didn't want to go to New York, and it took me a while to get here. I would do, you know, one regional theater production here, another little regional theater production maybe the following year. Whenever I came back, I was poorer than when I left. And doing a show out of town in New York didn't really get me any sort of cred in the city, you know, unless you're at,
right,
you know, like one of the premier, you know, unless you're doing Yale Rep or Long Wharf or Guthrie, you know, I wasn't getting any traction. And I was poorer when I left town, when I came back, because I made a whole lot more money working for a law firm. So somewhere along the line,
right,
when I was about, really, when I was almost 50, and just tired of beating my head against the wall, a friend of mine invited me to come out to L.A., we were members of a theater company called The Beacon Project. There were about six of us, and we produced off Broadway for about 8 to 10 years. Some really nice stuff that I'm proud of, but it wasn't, you know, that wasn't getting me anywhere. So I went to L.A., and within a year, I had an agent and had booked my first job. So there's a wonderful thing about working on film and television, and one is, it's called the residual check. It's just brilliant.
So, I love it.
And
that's
then
a personal goal of mine is to get a check every day in the mail.
Except for like Virginia Woolf, which we secretly videotaped, which of course is a huge no-no. So I can actually go back and look at that. I have no idea. You know, I have nothing from stage performances except the reviews and the pictures. Whereas something like, let's say, Mudbound, of which I'm also very proud to have worked in, I can go back and look at that piece of tape. And it's there forever. It's preserved. And
absolutely.
So when you do something that, like in that particular instance, and I chose that very specifically because I'm you don't always want to look at yourself because, you know, I can see myself, quote unquote, acting sometimes. But in Mudbound, I saw just...
We were talking, we weren't doing the show, we were talking on the phone, and you had, and I just caught it, and I thought about it for hours afterwards. You said, well, it takes me a minute to where I'm not acting on the tape, and I was like, man, that is, I know where you're, as an artist, I know exactly where you're coming from. There's some paintings I've done, painting, and it looks like I'm painting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's not exactly. I'm not happy with that. And I don't want to send it out, you know. And I've actually annoyed some clients, you know, they're like, oh, we're really excited to get that painting. And I'm like, well, actually, it's going to be another 4 days.
Don't let it go. Yeah, you're not ready to let it go yet because it's not right.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
This is a message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Older adults and people of any age who have serious underlying medical conditions are at higher risk for severe illness from COVID-19. If you are at higher risk, you should stay home as much as possible and avoid close contact with people who are sick to protect yourself. Call your doctor if you have concerns about COVID-19 and your medical condition, or if you get sick. For more information, visit cdc.gov.
Metal Babe Mayhem is super excited about their newest venture with MBM Music LLC. With MBM Music, we'll provide artists with a full-service platform to be seen and heard by assisting with necessary products, services, and fashion, all in an effort to increase exposure, fan base, and income. For more information, visit us at mbmmusicllc.com. That's mbmmusicllc.com. You create, we promote, plug in to the network.
Glittering amethyst, energizing citrine, colorful fluorite, the other side of the sun, Earth's treasures brought to light. Since 1999, we have offered a unique collection of hand-selected minerals and gems for every budget, for novices, collectors, and healers. Visit www.tosots.com. to view our wide selection of offerings and use coupon code ROCKS, that's ROXX, for 10% off your first order. Remember, TOSOTS.com, Earth's treasures brought to light.
Hi folks, Jamie Rocks here. Hey, if you're a big fan of cool historical books, like me, then you're going to want to check out our newest show sponsor, Michelle Albion, a fantastic author. She's got some really interesting, cool books out that you're going to want to check out. I'm a big fan of all of these. The Florida Life of Thomas Edison, The Quotable Edison, Quotable Henry Ford, Quotable Eleanor Roosevelt, and of course, The Quotable Amelia Earhart. Michelle's just very keen and very, very cool, and these are just very cool books. So check out her website. There's links to where you can pick these up on Amazon and Barnes & Noble all over the place. MichelleAlbion.com. 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 Very, very cool stuff. Check it out, folks.
You know, and...
Right. Especially
There are things that I would never put on my reel because I look at them and I cringe. But when you hit, I've said this before in another interview, but there's sometimes when you just hit that sweet spot, and you're in the flow and it's saved. You can almost like put it up on your shelf and look at it, and that's very gratifying.
What's a shame that the theater doesn't allow you to do that. because, you know, it almost reminds me of, you'll see these football coaches that'll just play their games over. And you always see it in like movies and stuff where they're sitting in a library somewhere, a little theater, and they're just watching the game over and over, and they're taking notes and they're figuring it out, you know? And I imagine for anybody, especially an actor, a performer, that would be so important. You know what I mean? Oh, this worked. Oh, that didn't. So we need to change this,
I don't think you can be that sort of intentional about.
I gotcha.
Yeah, because the thing about like being in the moment is being willing to. So, I mean, you have to, you know, that's exactly why the coach, I guess, is studying that, is to see patterns, so, and to see what not to do again and what to do again. But it's also about just knowing when you can let go, that you know the emotional roadmap of your character well enough, that then you can just live in the moment. And that's when it's the best. Yeah. Because
right.
if you're trying to
right.
manipulate things, particularly on film, everybody can see that. Everybody can see the wheels turning, and that's not a good thing. Yeah.
So I gotcha. I have a friend of mine that's stand-up comedy. And he was saying something very similar. We were talking one day, and he said, he goes, you know, because they don't allow any of those tapings. He'll try out. He said he'll work his act 100 times at, you know, open mic nights and this and that to judge audience reaction before he puts it out, you know, before we see it. And he said that a lot of those clubs won't allow you to film, and, you know, you get a lot of hot water. You have somebody in the audience with their phone out, you know. And I imagine it's the same thing. He goes, and you have to have that feeling. He goes, and what feels right with one audience may not work. You know, it's a different
may
audience.
Not work with it. May not work. So. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it takes me back to something that I think this was an old professor, you know, when I was studying theater, is like, you know, we would study style. You know, and that means, you know, you're doing restoration, or you're doing Brecht, or you're doing comedy or whatever. And I can't remember who said this, and it may be somebody famous. It's like, well, here's the secret to style. You need to know what kind of play you're in. It's like,
right.
And it's a little bit of the same thing. It's like, you know, you get the feel for your audience, or you get the feel for my husband and I did a, speaking of villains, my husband and I did a wonderful piece last year called Hot Date. And it's sort of a sketch comedy show. It's hard to describe, but it's this young husband and wife who've written this show. And it's about, you know, dating problems. They play many characters, whatever. Anyway, we got to work together, which we don't usually, I mean, we don't get to do that. I mean, it's been, it's rare. And it was just so much fun. But Robert was pointing out the other day when I was talking to somebody, he said, well, you know, you really did play a villain in that. And I said, well, yeah, we were both very sinister. But we could play that. It was a comedy. It was a sketch comedy show, and we could really push that. So it's like knowing, you know, again, know what kind of show you're in. So we could twirl our mustaches and have a wonderful time doing that, because we had the breath, the levity to do that. That's not the word I want. Not levity. We had the leverage. That's the word I want. We had the leverage to do that.
Absolutely. I did an art show one time, And I was so excited about it. I had moved to Florida and it's a new market and all, you know, and I had come from California and I always did real well with my art shows. You know, I'd do an art show and it was rare that we didn't sell out, you know, and you know, you don't want to compare yourself to anybody else, but you definitely compare yourself to yourself, you know, your different past performances and whatnot. And so I did this show and I didn't even think, it just slipped my mind. I was so excited about the show. Did my typical kind of crime paintings, you know, glamorous women up to no good, you know, that type of stuff. And it's always done real well for me. And this was in a LGBTQ gallery, and that was their clientele, and it was a bunch of gay guys. And nothing wrong with that, but they weren't, they
not
didn't want
the,
pictures
not,
of glamorous
not the,
women.
Not the right market. Not the right market for that, right?
Right. So we're doing the show, and it became very quickly, I was like, oh, man, we've been going 45 minutes. Nobody's interested in buying anything, you know, and I knew this crowd had money. I could see their shoes, you know, and their watches. What is up with this? And then it hit me, and I'm like, oh. And, it wasn't the right market for that. And that was the only person whose fault that was my own for not knowing what type of play I was going to be at. You know what I mean? Not doing my research. And I could have painted a bunch of stuff they would have liked. Not a problem. But I should have paid attention to that part of it a little more. But it happens, you know, it happens. But I was until I figured it out, I was like, oh man, what's going on? Is the run over? Do I need to go work at a law firm now?
Yes.
You know, it's crazy. But yeah, those residual checks.
How long have you been in Florida?
I moved here. You know, it's kind of a funny story about that. I was living in Southern California and in San Diego. I lived out there for about 10 years. Had a gallery and everything. And the recession that 2007, 2008 recession happened. And times got tight. People weren't buying big paintings of Marilyn Monroe, you know. Canned food.
Yeah, no kidding.
I had this epiphany, and this has happened to a lot of people I've known who've lived in California, is one day you wake up and you realize, and you kind of know it in a way, but you realize how much money like what your monthly nut is to crack, you know what I mean? What that egg is. And that's what I did. I woke up one morning, I'm like, holy smokes, I've been spending this much money for 10 years. I could
well,
be living
obviously,
like a king.
You obviously had a much higher lifestyle than I ever had in LA.
I don't know, man. I'm just saying, it was a big, I was looking at, like I said, Craigslist in Louisville, Kentucky, and places going, I could live real nice and just work from the internet.
True.
You know,
that'd
be great.
But, you know, when I was living in L.A., I was living on Sepulveda Boulevard, two blocks south of Sherman Way, across from the ex-Hooker Motels, sandwiched between the Ralphs. And what was the other food store that was very popular out there?
Probably
Albertsons. Yes, probably between the Ralphs and the Albertsons. And I was only paying $450 a month. So, I had this tiny little apartment. But you know, but I had an apartment in New York. So I mean, I didn't. You know, it was like I didn't need. I just thought of that as my second bedroom. And it was actually cheaper to have an apartment in California than to actually have an apartment with a second bedroom in New York. So,
right.
So it was an easy, but people would say to me, why do you live there? And it was perfectly fine. It was, you know, and once you went inside, it was gorgeous. You know, I had a little balcony overlooking the pool and
apartment.
Yeah.
It was getting to the apartment that was the issue.
That was sort of the issue, but only if, you know, but only in the sense that you know, we have some idea about, you know, what's an acceptable way for us to live. And the truth of the matter is that as an artist, and I think that's true to be like any artist, is that there's a level of that which makes us willing to be vagabonds.
Right.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah. So it very didn't true. Make any difference to me. It wasn't like, you know, I didn't, my self-worth was not tied up in the fact that I lived in, you know, in a not very
Waller.
Pretty part of Sepulveda Boulevard. That didn't say anything
right.
about who, you know. So, and I said to people, this is my base of operations. This is not my home, you know. So,
exactly.
And, yeah.
Well,
but, yeah, I
wound up.
I was living on the, I was not living the high life in L.A., so.
Which is the majority of people I know. No, I wound up visiting a friend of mine here in South Florida. I was on the East Coast. Like I said, I planned to move to Tennessee or someplace, and she said, come down and visit me because you're on the East Coast. You'll never I know you're going to wind up back in California, and you'll never come visit. And I said, okay. So I came down, you know, and we've all heard this story before. You know, you meet a girl and everything, and, you know, the
oh,
rest
that.
Is history.
Oh, yeah, that.
Yeah, and the funny part is our cost of living is about equal to where I started out in San Diego. So all this moving around and big plan that I'm right. Mm-hmm. But I got the girl and, you know, a dog now and stuff. So
mm-hmm.
it's
yeah,
it's
well,
okay.
Then, see, that's it.
Yeah,
no. You know, that's it. Well, there's
absolutely.
Always these great stories about, you know, Louisiana when we spend about half of our time there. And I will run it and they'll say, usually gentlemen, and I'll say, you know, are you from Louisiana? No, I'm from Indiana. And, of course, I always ask them the question, and I know what the answer is going to be. It's like, well, how did you end up in New Orleans or, you know, Covington, which is where I'm. They said, well, I met this girl in college, and she was from Louisiana.
Yeah.
And we were living in blah, blah, blah. And then one day she just said, I have to go home to my mama. And so now we're living in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We always have to go home to our mamas, baby.
Oh, I'm telling you. It's funny. People have asked me, too, because a lot of my old friends, they're like, Florida, you never even talked about it. I said, I know it wasn't part of the plan. And they're like, well, when do you think you'll move? How long do you think you'll stay there? And I always tell them, I'm like, understand, my wife, my mother-in-law, my wife's mama, lives three blocks from where we live. So
mm-hmm.
we ain't moving.
Oh, yeah.
That isn't going to happen. You know, I can go visit someplace, but no, it isn't, you know.
Yeah,
it's not
yeah,
going to happen.
Of course.
Now, you play such a convincing character in Army of One as a, like you said, a mother protecting her family. Yes, they're a cartel, but, you know, everybody's got to have a job, right?
I feel like I'm repeating myself because, of course, obviously a lot of this is, you know, a lot of people ask me the same questions. There was one reviewer who said, you know, why are all these men, you know, is it really feasible that, you know, all these men would, you know, be ruled by this woman? And I'm thinking, and then another reviewer, like the next day came back and said, well, it's really clear why, you know, how she, you know, how she controls all these guys. She is their mother. She is their mother.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And then, you know, I don't want to, you know, I'm not like, but then I have to deal with, what I have to deal with is what's the backstory? Where did these guys come from? How did I find them? What do I give to them that they don't have? How do I bring them, you know, and it doesn't take a lot of imagination to come up with a scenario where she combined them to her, with her protection, with her mothering. Literally, she mothers them.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And
don't do anything. It's
and
very
she,
true.
She takes care of them. So, you know, it's not a, you know, I think it's easier to see why they are bound to her than why, you know, members of the Mexican drug cartel were bound to El Chapo. You know,
right.
although we don't know, maybe they had great affection for him. I don't know, you know.
You know, and especially men who, with the mama character, especially men who maybe didn't have that in their life. And for the first time, they do have that, you know, and it's like.
Yeah, obviously she's targeted them. She has, you know, she has found them. She has groomed them. She has brought them into her fold. And
right,
you know, so just knowing that doesn't mean that I'm any more effective at playing the character, but just having that knowledge just you know, gives me something to basis to work with and from. So anyway, it's
it
makes sense to me. So and that's all that's important. Yeah.
You know what type of play you're in. You know what I mean?
I know
there you go.
What type of play I'm in. That's right.
That's right.
It's called an action movie. You know, I just want to give a shout out to all the people who are associated with this. One of the joys of working on this, when you're doing a project like this, that's not high budget, you know, there aren't, you know, a dozen fancy trailers on a, you know, on a lot,
right.
You know, when we weren't shooting, we were kind of, you know, all hanging out in a, you know, an air conditioned green room, quote unquote, for actors. So you get closer to people, you're just spending more time. I'm not sitting in a trailer for 3 or 4 hours waiting to be called to set and then going back to my trailer. You know, I'm hanging out with people. I'm interacting with them. So there, as it turns out, there's, you know, there's at least half a dozen people from this movie that I have remained in contact with. And very happily so. And that is
That's
not
awesome.
Always the case.
Right.
Not because people on other sets aren't nice. It's just that you don't always have the opportunity to spend that much time with them. And also just the faith that Stephen and Ellen had in me in allowing me to do this role, which was just a joy for me and a big leap forward. This is the first role that I've done where I'm a main part of the action. I'm part of the main story. I'm not, you know, somebody's mom who comes
right.
in at the tail end to say,
right.
oh, you know. Yeah. So,
did you know them beforehand when they approached you with this? Or
no,
was it
no.
Casting agency or?
I wasn't. No, they didn't approach me, baby. They didn't approach me. Nobody approaches me because you may think I'm a household name, but I'm not a household name. So, and I said this the other day on an interview that I was doing with Ellen, and she said, I didn't know that. I submitted myself for this. My agent did not submit.
Oh.
Me.
Wow.
So, at that point, so I guess we're going back about 2 years. I mean, Get Out had come out. So, you know, everything changed after Get Out. And I started to work pretty regularly. I mean, the last 3 years have been rather extraordinary. This particularly last year, I was really just sort of going from one project to another, as opposed to my days when I first came to New York, where if I got one regional acting job a year, I thought I had I didn't want to happen. But submitted myself. It was like, how do I get to the next level? Like, you know, how do I get? I want to do something where I am part of the main story. I'm not number 36 on the call sheet. You know, I'm right. Number 3 or 4 on the call sheet. So, there's a website called Actors Access. It's sort of the main clearinghouse for a lot of stuff. But when you're talking about movies that are at this level, they frequently will open it. Instead of just going through agents, they open it up so that actors can see it. Because
that's awesome.
They're not offering that much money, so you know they're opening to a broader field. So I saw this and I said, okay, I want to do it. So it's a leap of faith. You know, you're going down to and who knew? I mean, I could have auditioned for it, could have not gotten it, whatever. But Ellen said no. They saw something in the audition. They what they responded to was that it was a feeling of empathy and caring there for these my minions, and
your minions,
my minions, and then for me it's then I take a leap of faith. I was in New York at the time. Both my husband and I got cast in movies at the same time down south. So we drove to Louisiana, where I have a home. And when we got there, I got in my Prius, which was in Louisiana, and I drove to Alabama, and he stayed in the Sienna, and he drove north to Hattiesburg. And we were both working on these small independent films at the same time. That was very cool. I could look now and say, but I didn't know that Ellen was affiliated with this at all. All I saw, I think, was Stephen's name and Debbie Sheridan, who was acting as the casting director. And I looked them up on IMDb. I didn't see anything that rang any bells for me, you know, in terms of projects that I had seen or heard about. So it really is like, well, I'm just going to take a risk here, and I'm going to give them, you know, a little chunk of my time and see what happens. And it could have, and then you just say, well, the worst thing that could happen is that I might just end up with a nice little piece of film that I could put on my reel if we're doing something right. that I've never done before. And that's why I said, when to see the finished product and to see how what a substantial film it is, and how well it's put together and how well it plays, it's like waking up on Christmas morning and you got a bicycle. That's, you know, it's great.
That is fantastic. And, you know, it just goes to show, when you work with really good people. I was reading this, and I've said this on the show so many times, but I read this book. It was a biography about David Bowie, and somebody had asked him. They said, man, everything you do, you know, is just out of the park. You know, it's just amazing. You know, how do you keep just, you know, hitting home runs every time you're up to bat? And he's like, I work with the best people in the business, and it's easy to win when you work with the best, you know, and it's not a big mystery, but you know, everybody in this film on so many levels is just amazing. You know, it's really you know, and I gotta tell you, you know, I'm a guy, I like action movies, you know, it's one of my I don't want to say guilty pleasures, because it's not, I'm not guilty about it. I fully like a good action movie, you know. It's not all I watch, but not everything has to be just super artsy-fartsy to the extreme. You know what I mean? I don't mind those types of films.
Absolutely. Listen, my husband's a great aficionado of chick flicks. He loves them. He loves rom coms.
My father-in-law.
You know, it's
my
like, yeah. You know, I mean, everybody has. You know, it's not all he likes, but he. You know.
He likes that emotional. You know, I read an interview
I like things that have supernatural stuff in them, and he can't stand that. Every time there's like, you know, some woo-woo, he goes, oh, I have to leave. Bye, you know. So, you know, we all have our personal taste.
Exactly. Yeah, I read an interview with Quentin Tarantino, and he said his favorite type of film, he said, is the romantic comedy, because he likes that roller coaster of emotion that goes through. And, you know, and I'm sure it's like if you're a cook or something, the last thing you do when you come home, you don't probably want to cook, you know what I mean? If you're a chef or something, you know, maybe you do, I don't know. I'll tell you this, I don't sit around and draw for fun when I'm not working,
that's interesting because that's what, you know, because that's your job. I mean,
guys are weird. I was just talking to somebody about this too, is I think that's a big problem with the homeless. I don't know how it is for women, but I know men, it's very easy for men to identify whatever their job is. That's their identity, really. You know, and a lot of homeless people don't have a job.
I think that's true for a lot of people. And
if you're missing that,
I try to tell myself that, you know, I am not what I do. You know that. There's just sort of intrinsic worth in every person, just because they exist. They should be validated for that. But the truth of the matter is that we all sort of there is that sort of I have to be productive. Well, we are, you know, we are part of the, you know, we're. It's the Puritan ethic, you know. It's the work ethic.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's ingrained in us, you know. It's funny. I tell people all the time. They're like, "Well, you don't seem like a real competitive person." I'm like, "I'm not. I'm not competitive against other people. I absolutely am competitive against myself." That's what gets me up every day.
That's interesting.
That's what gets
me
up every
day. Oh, okay.
I've got to do better than yesterday. You know, I don't know, people too, it's how you're raised. Like, I remember my father was a engineer. He was an inventor, that type of thing. And whenever he would have a big deal and make a bunch of money, one of the things he always did is he'd bring the check home and he'd sit it on the kitchen table for a day.
Wow.
You know, before putting it in the bank, just to kind of show that, you know, that new swimming pool we're getting, here's where it's coming from. Just entering middle age now, and I'm kind of the same way, you know. It's like, oh, I got, I got to do it, you know, I got to make this happen. And I don't know, it's just, it's weird. It's what you're raised with and whatnot, I think. And
yeah, well, recently, I'm sorry, I've said recently, I've said for a long time that, part of this, I'm in my third act now, you know, New York, then going to L.A., and then coming to a halt after Katrina, and my going home to take care of my mom. And so when I started working in Louisiana, and most of what you see on my resume since, you know, 2009 on, which was after my mother passed away, that's all cast out of Louisiana. So I had basically assumed that I wasn't going to work again. And then it was such a surprise when the film industry came back in Louisiana like gangbusters. And I was sitting there with these, you know, 10 or so really nice film TV credits, and I got sort of, bumped up to the top of the list to audition for things. It took a while to work, and small roles, and I just kept saying, well, you know, the great thing was that I let it go, you know. When I was taking care of my mom, I let it all go, and I said, my job now is to take care of my mom. But And I said, you know, if I never
totally
work again, it's fine. Well, here's the truth. I'm lying to you. The prospect this year not working is driving me crazy.
I got you.
So the truth of the matter is that I want to, because I've been lying all this time. My identity is tied up with this, and I want to be working. So, yeah.
I hear you, man. I hear you. I have so many friends. I have a lot of friends in the nightclub world and DJs and the like. And, you know, it was so sad this year because, you know, several friends, I don't want to mention who they are, but they had, you know, they got these, what they call these residencies. And, you know, they'd show up and play at a nightclub and walk out of there with a $30,000 check. It's pretty nice. You can buy a lot of fancy cars and stuff with that. And unfortunately, when this pandemic happened, that doesn't that business dried up. But the mortgage rates and the notes on those cars and stuff are still happening, you know.
Get back to my thesis here, which is that as an actor, I'm committed to living the life of a vagabond.
That's
which
right.
is that we, you know, if you want a big fancy car, you're going to have to be able to, you want to be committed to what it takes to get the big fancy car. And if you're in debt for that car and life changes, you're not going to keep that car. It's not yours, you know. And when you look at what it really takes to live a happy and fulfilled life, it's not, you know, those aren't the things, you know.
Exactly. You can't buy it.
Exactly. You know, Robert and I just joke about when we were both, you know, semi-working. Of course, he has a great stage resume. I mean, he's, you know, he was in the original Fiddler on the Roof, and he did Patty Chaffee's last play, and he's a well-hunted son, and, you know, but that was back in the day when to work on Broadway, you were working for Bupkis. And then, you know, one day he woke up, you know, after his third or fourth Broadway show when he was driving a cab, you know.
Right.
And we joke about, we wonder what it was that we, how did we live? We lived on air, you know, but that was back back in the day where you go to the ATM and get out, you know, $20, and I could live for a whole week on $20. That doesn't happen anymore. But still, that, you know, we still sort of live like students, I think. But you know, we don't want for anything. There's nothing we can't do if we wanted to do it.
Right.
But, you know, we're not buying a big fancy car. No. Mm-hmm.
And after years of it, you kind of get used to having butter noodles with Parmesan cheese. That's pretty good.
Well, let me just explain to you, baby. I'm from New Orleans.
That's true.
We eat well.
And Italian.
We eat well.
Oh, that's awesome. That is fantastic. Oh, man. Well, I could sit here. Geraldine, I don't want to do it. I don't want to end the show because I'm having so much fun. And you are
you were so much fun. You know, we called each other last week to say, oops, I screwed up and missed the show. And then what did we talk for, half an hour because we had so much to talk about?
It is so true. It is so true. And didn't record it. Well, and we should have. It was great.
Oh, well, that was probably. You know, primo stuff. But anyway, this is a delight. Thank you so much. Thank you for just letting me blather on about whatever. And I hope that the Army of One folks hope that they're happy that I've promoted the film sufficiently. And let me just say again before we go, I am so proud to be part of this film, and I think it's very entertaining, and I think it's I just think it's super. So I hope everybody will want to go out and rent it or buy it or see it wherever they can, watch it on Amazon or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And folks, it is out on everything. It's on iTunes, Vudu,
yes,
Xbox, Google Play, mm-hmm. Amazon.
It's everywhere.
Everything.
Mm-hmm.
I will post a direct link on all my social media following the show here to the we watch it on Amazon, and where you can rent it on Amazon. It's a fantastic film. And, you know, this is a fun, you know, this week everybody's kind of doing their, you know, I know a lot of people are stuck home. You know, it's a weird, people got time to fill, man. So, you know, this is a great way to fill a couple hours here.
Absolutely.
Fantastic film. So I'll be posting a direct link to it. And I want everybody to watch it. This is really, a really fun, cool. If you like action movies, man, this is a great movie to watch. I really enjoyed it. I've watched it a couple times, and I'm going to go back and look for that scene with the
You'll be surprised. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man.
You'll
be
surprised.
I can't wait.
It's pretty damn impressive. All right, Jamie. I'm going to go now because I'm going to make a fabulous dinner for my husband. Okay?
Well,
you can hear him yelling in the background. Say feed me.
Thank
feed
you
me,
for letting
feed
us
me,
feel
feed
you for
me.
Have
okay.
a great night, a good
All
weekend,
right.
and a fantastic holiday.
All right, same to you. Thank you, my love. Bye-bye.
Absolutely. Well, folks, that's going to wrap it up for us tonight. This is, man, what a fun show. I just love Geraldine Singer. She is out of sight. She's, you know, dynamite. And just really cool, turned up to 10. We also have a link up on our show page to her website where you can find out more about her and the various. And she's been in so many things, not just the ones we've mentioned, but some of my favorites. She was on Blacklist. She was on a lot of cool stuff. So definitely check that out. This episode, of course, will be converted to a podcast and pushed out on all the various social media platforms and on all the podcasting platforms. We're on like 250 of them. All the big ones, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. And you can always go to my website as well, jamierocks.us, JAMIEROXX.US, like the United States, the abbreviation. But yeah, jamierocks.us or poproxradio.com, P-O-P-R-O-X-X.com, or radio.com, poproxradio.com. They both get you to the same place. But yeah, there's, if you want to, you know, hear me talk to cool people, this is episode 1060. So, you know, you realize that's like 46 days, 24 hours. If you were to listen to all the episodes, it would take you 46, 47 days to get through them. That's a lot of content, man. A lot of content. And it's all for free and whatnot. We have it all archived there. So, and it's archived. I think on the big podcasting platforms, they only archive like the last 300 shows or something like that. But we have, you know, all of them, all the whole thousand and whatnot on the website. Anywho, man, Geraldine had a great idea, man. Dinner. I think it is time to make something for dinner, and that's what I'm going to go do. Hey, a final thought. The holiday is upon us. It's the holiday week. I know people are... you know, maybe a little stressed or whatnot about the holiday. Number one, don't go crazy. Nobody expects you to. You don't, you know, don't go into debt showing somebody you love them. You know, that's just silly. And number two, they should know that anyway. Number two, when you're out shopping and whatnot, give a thought for the retail workers and whatnot that are out there. You know, you think your day's been crazy. They've had a crazy day, and you know, wear your mask and stuff, and don't bitch about it. It's just don't even get me on a soapbox about that. But be nice to people. How about that? You know, get your stuff and get the hell out of there, so they can the next person get theirs. You know,
Just be kind, be nice, and it's the season for it. It's the season for it. Nobody wants to deal with a grumpy Gus or grumpy Gertrude. That's no fun. Anywho, that's going to wrap it up for us tonight. We will be back tomorrow. We've got a fantastic film tomorrow where the main character may be a vampire. Ooh, you don't know. You don't know. Well, you watch the movie. Anyway, we've got the writer-director tomorrow, and it's just a very, very cool, another film we're going to be talking about. So tune in tomorrow for that, and we will see you later. Have a good one, everybody. Bye.
This has been pop art painter Jamie Rocks's Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. It has been executive produced by Jamie Rocks, recorded at his studio in Deerfield Beach in South Florida. All rights reserved by Pop Rocks Limited for broadcast on Blog Talk Radio.
Tana Oli, Pop Rocks Radio.
Estás escuchando Jamie Rocks de Pop Rocks Radio. Manténganse al tanto.
Hej, det här är Hicks från Sverige och ni lyssnar till Pop Rocks Radio med Jamie Rocks.
Blog Talk Radio.